Welcome to La Liga Weekly. So did we have the wrong club in crisis? Real Madrid was supposed to be sweeping majestically through all before them, but now it's one win in four, and that was against Celtic. Those pesky Spanish clubs, Girona and now Rayo Vallecano, are really annoying. At least Real Madrid now get to play Liverpool. Let's hope it's the first of 50 meetings in the next five seasons. That would definitely save football. Barcelona have got the best defence in the world. Fact. The key to understanding statistics is not to ask too many questions once you get the answer that you're looking for. Here's a question. How on earth are Atletico third and won a game in four, and Espanyol even let them have a man advantage and they still couldn't beat them? Numerical advantage doesn't seem to count for much. There were eight red cards in La Liga in this weekend and a total of four goals scored against those undermanned teams. My new proposal for football and for Florentino Perez, nine aside. There's loads of rumours to the Seville derby, and it was lovely. Contrary to rumours, we do talk about Elche. Jorge Almiron has parted company with the club. Yeah. Who, you say? I thought they'd already sacked him, you say. Fair point. I don't think you can cheat the new manager bounce by constantly sacking the same bloke. There we are. Patreons, thank you for your continued support. Terry is here. Of course. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of the Spanish football this weekend, how was your first live game at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium?
Yeah, different. First order result, cheesed off, hacked off about the scoreline, particularly the first half performance. And I'm great to see live what other Spurs supporters are moaning about. Obviously, it's the first half performances from Tottenham and it was replicated in this game. And then second half, they were a much better team but couldn't get the equaliser. More importantly, my first visit to the new stadium, it's awesome. It's not a very nice part of London. It's the same as it was when I was playing there. And in the middle of Tottenham High Road is this massive like spaceship in the middle of it all. It looks kind of odd, but inside it's incredible. My opinion, for me, it was too nice. I like a bit of rawness. I like a bit of... this was very sophisticated. Something to eat before the game. A friend of mine invited me to the game. Fantastic tickets. Took your seat about 3 minutes before kickoff, so I didn't get to see much of the build-up and stuff like that. And when Spurs were 2-0 down at half-time, the last thing I wanted to see or hear was a band in the concourse. A band playing Uptown Funk. And I was like... What this is what I'm used to, so it was an experience. The stadium's incredible, but I still then I come home and watch the Betis Sevilla game, and that was football support in its rawness. You know, the atmosphere, and so there's a lot to be said. I'm not sure the Premier League grounds are like Tottenham's. I know they're not in terms of the facilities and the infrastructure and the setup. But I do, every time I go to a Premier League game, I do feel that it can be a little bit sterile in terms of the support. Now, it's not all of the clubs. I'm not tying them all with the same brush. But there is times where I do. So if someone shouts at the game yesterday, everyone looks around as if to say, shh. It was almost, someone shouts out something, everyone looks around. If you do it two or three times, you can see everyone go, oh, he's bloody annoying. And it's that type of atmosphere. So, I mean, I wasn't behind the goal in the wall, they call at Spurs. But no, it was a lovely experience, a pleasure to go. Just cheesed off with the result. It was lovely.
I had a nice afternoon out.
Yeah, exactly. So
to be fair,
it's different.
The good news is that quite a lot of stadiums struggle, I think, when they're new. I think everyone ends up in wrong parts of the ground, and don't they? Who you're not with people that you've sat with and that you don't know and stuff. And the atmosphere does, I think, sometimes build up a bit when a club's been at the stadium a little bit longer. But I mean, I've been there and I thought it was quiet, I must admit, for all of that massive wall of support. And also, I also thought it was nice. I was there as a neutral and I felt perfectly comfortable.
Yeah, when Liverpool scored for 5 minutes, it was silent. Mm. The Liverpool supporters in the corner make their noise and cheering the goal and singing a few songs, and the rest of the stadium was silent. I'm thinking, there's nearly 60,000. There's 60,000 people in here. Come on, that's like, you know, it's. I don't want to go back to when there was fences all around the stadium and everyone was, you know, maybe standing on the terraces is up for debate. But there's a rawness that's lacking there in some of the stadiums where it can be lovely. It's nice. Yeah. Do I want to go back to the old days? No, of course I don't. But You know, I do see some of the stadiums in Spain now, and I do see an atmosphere. To just mentioned there, the Betis Sevilla derby, Rayo Vallecano against Real Madrid. It looks like the type of game I would like to go be at,
yeah,
because of the atmosphere in the stadium, as opposed to, you know, really nice. You know, it's a long event as well for a lot of people. I got there 2.5 hours before kickoff. It was, you know, loads of people in the stadium. Still loads of people in the stadium at 2 hours after the kickoff. So I guess it's going in that direction. And, you know, it's a nicer experience than what it used to be. But I do miss that rawness that you used to get when
What you need is, Terry, a book about the changing nature of English football. That's what you need, everybody. I'm working into everything. Get It Kicked by John Driscoll, The Battle for the Soul of English Football. I don't really go into support. I do go into a little bit of that. A lot of it is that old school, new school stuff where no one's advocating. It's like we had the conversation about tackling and everything, didn't we? That, you know, no one's advocating going back to allowing people to do leg crunching challenges from behind and all of that. We've also allowed the game, funnily enough, we can discuss this weekend, we've allowed the game to be too slowed down, I think. Certain aspects, and you're able to spoil a game.
It can be sterile. Yesterday, I was with 15 minutes. So that's the first tackle.
Yeah,
in 15 minutes, and then it's Liverpool playing at Spurs, and it was by a Spurs player. And I said, it's the first time we've made a tackle, and their first goal. There was three or four times that a tackle could have been made, and Spurs stepped off, and it might just be Spurs. But in this particular game, I was thinking, it reminded me particularly in the first half, of when you as a reserve player or a first team player, you're playing first team against reserves on a Friday morning, and a manager instructs you to go careful on the tackling, you know, don't want anyone getting injured. That's how it was like for Spurs in the first half. The second half, they like, no, it's very technical. I can see the managers on the sideline. I know we see it in La Liga, but if I was playing and Conte was my manager, and literally every time a player got the ball and every time it was... He was pointing, and he's not the only manager that does it. A lot of managers do it, pointing and telling them every aspect. And you're looking at micromanaging in the extreme there. And I mean, there was a time when managers didn't come out the bench. They just sat there smoking cigars and watching a game of football and issuing instructions every now and then. But now to have a manager that's, if you're playing on that side of the pitch and you're just in front of the dugout and you have a manager, I'm not just picking out Conte. But it was interesting to see him in the stadium. It's literally every time, every player, every time they get the ball, he's telling them where to go. And then he's also waving at players, telling them when they're out of possession and when they haven't got the ball, what to do. And I'm not sure how much that has an impact on the players. It might have on the ones that are closest to you. But it's interesting. You know, I don't get to go to Premier League games very often, and it's interesting to see the differences between... Klopp stood out on the touchline, but he didn't get involved as much as Conte. And Conte isn't alone. Unai Emery, we saw at the weekend against Aston Villa, everybody was like, oh, they've seen it before at Arsenal, but kind of forgotten how it can be. He was like it. Lopetegui would be like it when he goes into Wolves. It's just interesting to see a manager constantly. You know, you used to get the ump when the manager stepped out and shouted at you across the pitch. You could hear him, and it might have made a difference because he wasn't there all the time and he wasn't doing it all the time. So it probably had more of an impact doing it like that than it does when you're micromanaging every single kick of the ball. I had loads of issues with the way Spurs played in the first half, and loads of, you know, they're much better in the second, and I can see why.
Before we get into the Spanish football, I have another question that is sort of covered in my book, Get It Kicked by John Driscoll. Is how much the English game has borrowed, learned, stolen, been taken over, whatever your perspective is, by incomers? Lots of people like it, lots of people don't. But it's continued apace. You mentioned Lopetegui. So he's at Wolves. Unai Emery is now at Aston Villa. They like a Spanish coach in the Premier League. How do you think those two will get on?
It'd be interesting. I think Unai Emery has, I think, has got a little bit more pedigree than Lopetegui. I see Lopetegui lumped in with Unai Emery, and I don't think that's the case. I mean, Unai Emery has achieved far more than Lopetegui with the one Europa League victory for Sevilla. Unai Emery has done it multiple times and been around a bit longer. And I kind of see Lopetegui lumped in with in that same bracket. And I don't think that's right. I don't think that's fair. So at the moment, I would say Unai Emery is far ahead of Lopetegui, but there are similarities. Wolves have been desperate to get him for some while now. And I'm interested to see how it goes because what I've seen of Wolves so far, I thought they needed someone that maybe not play more expansive football, more attacking football, and some output at the top end of the pitch. I'm not sure Lopetegui is going to be that guy. But Wolves have been desperate to get him for this, the third time they've tried. They've finally succeeded in getting there, man. I'm interested to see how that works out, to be honest.
Yeah, I already feel like he is the
I'm
Wolf.
interested in Lopetegui. Yeah, I'm interested in seeing judging Lopetegui more than I, have seen so far at Sevilla. Is there more to him than what we've
Yeah,
already seen?
because I already feel like he is the Wolves manager because of the way Wolves' problems are so similar to Sevilla's problems under
Yeah.
Lopetegui, in that too many of the same kind of players, and you think that they're a good attacking team, and sometimes the early build-up phase looks quite nice, and you think, oh, this could develop into something. And then the amount of times you think it didn't. It gets very sterile at the top end of the pitch, which is exactly the same problem with that I think that he has and that Wolves had. So we shall see. Right. Now, as promised, La Liga Weekly. People just love
So
that.
much to talk about this
There's an
weekend as
awful
well.
lot, isn't there?
It's been,
We
a
had a
really
mad
good
number of
weekend.
red cards. I've got a theory on that. We'll do tonight's game. We're recording this very late on Monday evening, so you might get it Tuesday sometime. Because we thought, right, Vallecano Real Madrid could be an important game, and so it proved, Terry. The European champions, the erstwhile leaders of La Liga, beaten and off the top because Rayo Vallecano basically are really good.
Exactly that, and in there are occasions I think Real Madrid have lost at Real before, heavily criticised. I don't want to do that on this occasion. Real Madrid did all right. Toni Kroos was suspended, Benzema is injured. Still got a fantastic squad, Real Madrid. But if they're not at their best, they might suffer at a team like Rayo. Rayo were absolutely awesome. All those discrepancies I'm moaning about yesterday about Spurs in the first half not putting their foot in, not tackling, and perhaps not being direct enough at times. And you see Rayo tonight and you think, I wasn't wrong. That was the problem yesterday because Rayo are chasing lost causes. They're closing people down. They're being aggressive about crossing the line. And they were brilliant to watch. And on top of that, it's not just about their spirit and their attitude and determination and the atmosphere at Vallecas. They're good. They've got some really good players and they played some really good stuff against Real Madrid. And, they deserve to be 1-0 ahead. They're unfortunate to go behind 2-1. They didn't let it get them down. They got back to 2-2. Bedlam with the penalty, with, referee looking at VAR giving it. And then the Courtois making the save. Carvajal encroaching. I think Courtois was slightly off his line as well. Terrible penalty by Trejo. But then he gets the opportunity to retake it. And you're thinking after that really bad first penalty, give it to someone else. And he didn't. He took it and took a much better second one. So, Rayo, they were sensational. So, all the plaudits, all the credit. I'm not going to lump in on Real Madrid. It's the first defeat of the season. I'm not going to be too critical. The one thing I would look at with maybe the substitutions from Ancelotti, he didn't have as many big names on the bench, and he still couldn't get Hazard on. So that maybe says something to me that it was crying out for. I know Hazard hasn't been at his best for a while, but it was crying out for something, just to do something different. He put Mariano Diaz on, and he made other changes. Vasquez for Carvajal and Camavinga came on for Tchouaméni. But I'm thinking you're chasing the game. What harm it with one sub left, 10 minutes, just to throw a wild card into the mix to see what could happen. My theory on that is they're hoping to keep Hazard fit. They're hoping he has a really good World Cup, which is possible. And then they're hoping that
Salah.
someone's going to come along and sell him.
He needs to leave, doesn't he? He does need to now. His renaissance lasted about 10 minutes, didn't it, at Real Madrid this season?
And in fairness to him, he came back pre-season with a really good attitude, finished the season with a good attitude, and just hasn't been given opportunities. And when we want to criticise and say, well, he did this and he did that, he didn't play well in that game, he's had no run of games to get any form or sharpness behind him. Played out of position. He, at the start of the season, he was earmarked as the substitute striker for Benzema, which isn't his position. So, I agree with you. I think he needs to move. He needs a good World Cup. He needs another good club to come in and buy him. And he needs to get his career going again. But it's clear that there is no future for him there at Real Madrid. So that was the only criticism I would have of Ancelotti, other than the fact his team, by and large, in that game, were outplayed by a really good, they're really good, Real. And there's another couple of games I'm going to look at this weekend where I'm not going to criticise the obvious ones to criticise and give credit to a team that give more evidence to the theory that I have, and I'm sure you agree now, that there aren't those easy games anymore in this league. And it's really evolved into a league now where, you know, the big teams in this league, they pretty much every game now is a tough ride for them. And yes, sometimes they'll win 2-3, 4-0, but we're not getting those silly results that we had, you know, 7-8 years ago on a regular basis. And we never looked at games like this and thought, yeah, that could be a tricky game for Real Madrid. No, we did think that, and you know, a team like Rio would. In the past, we always thought, yeah, it might be tricky. It might only be 3 or 4 nil. Ronaldo might only get 2 goals. It was that sort of thing. And then we looked at the number of games in the season where Real Madrid or Barcelona could drop points. It was the obvious ones. And then it was all about the clashes between each other. But now we're seeing, you know, every week, you know, games where you think, you have to stop yourself thinking, oh, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Atletico, they'll win that. It's not like that in this division anymore. And Rio, great credit to them. They were brilliant. Fantastic.
There are 19 out of 20 good teams in La Liga this season. We'll get to team 20 later. Let's do Barcelona, shall we? So, as I say, proof positive, Terry. They are the best defence in Europe. Another clean sheet. It's quite extraordinary, isn't it, that The Europe has obviously been a massive, massive disappointment for them. The Clásico was very disappointing, but they keep doing the business, and it's yet another win, and they are top of the league again.
They haven't conceded a goal at home this season. Yeah,
incredible, isn't it? I mean, Ter Stegen has been brilliant.
They should have done.
Yep,
he made a good save in the weekend when it was 0-0. When Ramazani went through, we can say he should have scored. He should have scored. But it was good save from Ter Stegen. He didn't have much else to do other than that. It did have a testimonial feel to it. But the one criticism you could have of Barcelona in this game was they had 27 shots, 13 on target, so they were very inefficient in front of goal. Probably led by Ferran Torres, who showed his frustration when he was substituted. Actually, he should have been substituted maybe earlier. But I think the frustration stemmed from the fact that he was responsible for a lot of the opportunities they had and he didn't take them. The pressure's building up on him with the competition for places alongside Lewandowski. So they need to be more efficient in front of goal. Half-time, it was still 0-0 when they clearly should have been ahead. And you're thinking, well, you know, El Maria could dig in here because they'd had the one opportunity to score themselves. But they managed in the end, Dembele with a quick goal in the second half with great piece of skill, good finish. And then Frankie de Jong wrapping it up to make it two. But the reason I said it had a bit of a testimonial feel to it was the long break in play when Piqué went off. He went off quite early, actually, didn't he? It was like 8 or 9 minutes to go and the game stopped and all the players came over and opposing players were shaking his hand. And I'm thinking, if I know how Maria playing, I'd be thinking, come on, you want to get up and go on with this. And Piqué, you know, kept a clean sheet. He played well. And there's still part of me that it's a little bit of a query, I think, on whether he's obviously feels he's made the right decision. He didn't have much to do in this game, although Ramazani tried to run him a few times and tried to get him behind. I still think there's enough in the tank for Piqué to have been more than useful for Barcelona for the rest of this season.
Did anyone else say otherwise? Because it's his call, isn't it? Very much his call, isn't it? This. I think they were probably. I know he's paid an eye-watering amount of money, so obviously That's the case, isn't it, for a guy who isn't their first choice. But it's a weird thing because you see him play in that game, and then you think, wow. So he might play Tuesday night against Osasuna, but that might be it. Might never see him play again, and yet he's playing for Barcelona. You know, it's talk about going out. It's always weird going out at the top. I get why you want to do it, but it's like, I mean, Zidane's last game was the World Cup final, wasn't it? You know, it's just weird, isn't it, that you're that level. Yeah. And then you never play.
Yeah.
The day after, that's it. You never play again.
Exactly. And I, there must be, I mean, they haven't, I guess that he came out with the announcement, didn't he? Mm. It appears to be off his own back. But I'm sure there's been conversations and debate along the way this season. Then, you know, he probably feels the criticism he got for the game against Inter, when he hasn't been playing on a regular basis. He's not his usual match fitness and match sharpness. And I guess there's been, you know, conversation between him and Xavi as the season has gone on. Maybe there could have been some more talking between them to say, at the very least, let's, you know, see the season out and then, you know, have to make that decision. But I'm not saying it leaves them short, but in terms of quality, you know, still, you still look at him and think, if he was to play again on a regular basis and get up to speed, Araujo and Koundé, I think, for me now, are the best two. But if either of them are not fit, I think Piqué is the next best one. Above Alonso, above Eric Garcia, above Christensen. And it's important to have people like that around. And so to do it mid-season, or roughly mid-season, it is strange. But that's why the game had a testimonial for him. When you hear some of the... I mean, in general, I say, here's some of the comments. There's the two numpties on TalkSport, weren't it, that said he was the worst. I mean, I could have picked. I nearly bit. I'm biting now.
Is it? Yeah. Go on. Do it. I'm not sure it's a serious.
We retired 8 years ago.
Yeah. Story again.
You know they said it's all well and good. But yeah, Puyol next to him. Puyol retired 8 years ago, and then one of them said that Messi. It's all well and good when you got Messi in your team, and some said he's got over. You don't get over 100 caps for Spain and win a World Cup and win the European Championships. And one of them said, "Yeah, but it helps when you got Messi in your team." Messi hasn't played for Spain. That is the two obvious flaws in the argument, and I don't see why we would ever go down that road of obviously criticizing an obviously talented legend of Barcelona easily. And a legend of the game. I mean, his partnership with Puyol on that, his partnership with Ramos, the titles he's won. He's won four titles since Puyol retired, and a treble since Puyol retired. So, and when they won the first European Cup Champions League under Pep, the back four, I'll try and remember this, was Puyol was right back, Yaya Toure, Pique, and Silvinho were the back four. Against Manchester United in Rome because there was injuries. And, you know, it's why can't we just, particularly ex-pros, have the respect? I mean, we all have to work hard to get to the level, whatever level we got. You got to become a professional at any level. You worked hard and you were lucky, you were fortunate to be there. Those two must have worked hard at some stage. Jermaine Pennant and Jamie O'Hara, I'm talking about.
At football, yeah, not necessarily.
Yeah, at football.
The other side of it,
at football. Yes. And then to get to... PK, where you for 15 years you're Barcelona's centre half, and you get over 100 caps, and you win literally every trophy that's possible. It's just ridiculous for someone to say he was lucky. Wimbledon, I might have been lucky. Wimbledon might have been lucky. I won one trophy. Perhaps Wimbledon were lucky to do it despite me playing. I hope not. I hope they don't feel like that.
No.
But players can win players can win one trophy. We see players that have won a World Cup, and we say, oh, he was world class. They might have been fortunate, but not to have won the amount of trophies that Piqué has done. There's nothing fortunate about it.
You can be lucky if you're from a country that does well, and there are no good goalkeepers, but you're so you get in on that basis. But almost no players are lucky, are they? I just don't think it's a. I'm not sure it was a serious opinion. I think they're laughing as they say it. I think they've just had a meeting beforehand and said, "Let's say PK's rubbish." I honestly just don't value. I can understand people not liking him because
exactly like Ramos
because of what he says and he winds people up and all of that business.
Yeah.
I can understand you say you could say, "Oh no, I prefer Sergio Ramos to PK." I get those things, but just to say the guy's rubbish It's just, it's not even, I don't think it's a serious opinion. I honestly.
The worst player in that Barcelona team, but even that's a stupid. Yeah, I mean, he's played in more than one Barcelona team for 15 years. There's been various Barcelona teams that he's been in.
Yeah.
And I actually looked at Piqué's highlights, not in terms of trophies won. I wanted to remind myself what he was like when he was younger. And, I think he's up there with the Maldinis and Beckenbauers and Bobby Moores and Baresi. I really genuinely think that. And Ramos. And when you look at his attributes, tall, strong, elegant in possession of the ball and bringing the ball out the back, his range of passing it and diagonals and stuff like that, which we rave about some players. We barely mention it about Piqué. And do you know what? He's a really good defender. I mean, he's not the quickest, but he's a really good defender. And then if you want to throw someone into the mix when you're losing and you put someone up front, he's shown in the past, he's got the skill to play up there. He's back to goal. And it's not just a case of head on a stick the big lad up there and hope for the best. And Pep said a really good thing about he always delivered in big games. And he did. And I think he's a superstar.
Right. Here's a question. You got a 15-year-old Sergio Ramos and a 15-year-old Gerard Piqué. You can only take one of them. Who are you having?
Oh, good God. Ramos. I'm going to answer it quick before I think too long. because of the goals.
Right, okay. Yeah, fair enough.
I'm surprised Piqué didn't get more, to be honest. But that is the difference between the two. Ramos, the ridiculous amount of goals.
Yeah, okay.
But more red cards, so you have to balance that out. I would take both, though. Oh, yeah. As a pair as well. Brilliant.
Yeah. Complimentary, actually, because that's the difficulty.
And also the history.
The question, yeah.
The history of the two talismen of two fierce rivals. And yet when they played together at international level, they gelled. And two massive personalities. Absolutely huge personality. We do Ramos when he retires. And at the moment, Piqué in terms of probably he has probably taken his after ball in recent seasons with other aspects of his life. I'm not talking about his personal life. I'm talking about business issues and stuff like that. Getting involved with the Davis Cup and owning Andorra, and that can be a little bit irritating for a coach like Xavi that wants a player that's solely focused on one thing. So it probably is around the right time for Piqué to step aside, but I'm surprised it's in the middle of the season. But I've thoroughly enjoyed watching him play for the last 15 years or so.
We've got too much to talk about to spend a long time on handballs, but one of our patrons, Michael, disagreed with us about the Asensio one last week.
Yes.
The one this week, I think it's a mad handball. That I just think it's outrageous. The one that Barca got. The header. Oh, who is it? Is it Torres who heads it against the defender's hand? He's gone over the defender's head.
Yes.
And he's jumped.
Yeah.
And his hand is up because he's jumping and he heads it against from behind. Someone heading the ball against you from less than a meter away from behind cannot possibly be handball. It's a ludicrous handball. And yet they do now give them.
Bad penalty.
Yeah. In the normal course of play, the commentator and Albert Ferrer, who was co-coms, neither of them called handball in the normal course of play. And it's purely, if you look at it with, look at his hand is away. Of course, his hand's away from his body. He's just jumped for the ball and it's gone over his head.
Can't. Exactly.
You'll get the only answer to this is not to jump for the ball. Because if you leap as high as you possibly can, your hand's going to move away from your body. And then the other guy heads it against you. It's a penalty. So I'm glad Lewandowski did the decent thing.
Yeah. It looked intentional. But it looked like at that stage, there was an element in that game where you're thinking this could be one of those nights. Almeria, they've had a chance to nick one already. I wasn't thinking they could win the game, but it might have been one of those nights when Barcelona continued to miss chances. But eventually, Dembele got the opener and Frank de Jong got the second. So it wasn't an emphatic win in terms of the scoreline, but it was a dominating performance.
Right. Seville derby, Terry. Count the players. I actually mean it about, I'm only joking about not playing 11-side, but was quite an open game towards the end because there's only 19 players on.
Yeah. Did you see the amount of fouls Betis made during the whole game?
What was it?
Six fouls, and they got four yellows and two reds.
Yeah.
But I can't argue with any of the reds.
Right, okay.
Borja Iglesias is the only debatable one. He clearly doesn't mean it.
Mm.
Instantly, he's apologising, and Jordan is down. But he did catch me. You see the replay, there's only one outcome. But he studs went on the ankle, and it could have been even nastier for Jordan. And then you look at the Montiel challenge. What was he? And he's arguing with the referee. The only argument he's got is the referee gave him a yellow instead of a red, and then VAR intervened and got involved. I was really impressed with him. Wrote the referee's name down, Jose Maria Sanchez Martinez, with the speed in which he ran off every time and back on the pitch after the VAR check. He was sprinted across the pitch, and every offence seemed to be right on the opposite side of the field of play. And he sprinted across at full length, got the decision, came back on, sprinted back on. And Fekir's was deserved as well. So I don't think they can have any complaints, either team. It was chaotic. It's bordering on getting out of control, I have to be honest. The atmosphere in those. I love the Grand Derby. But I think it's bordering on I think the people responsible need to try and put a lid on it and calm it down. Monchi in particular, who's getting involved left, right and centre. And now they're trying to ban him from the stadium. Because the things he said in the director's box, the way he reacted on the pitch after the game, and it's those type of people have got to be responsible for making sure that we don't have any more issues like we had last season when Jordan got hit by the javelin. The tifosi, is it the big banner that was provocative as well? There's an atmosphere that's across the line, I think, now in those games. I love the passion, love the rivalry, we all do. But I think it has to be the people in charge at the clubs now. And in fairness to the managers, they didn't inflame it this weekend. But I think they need to try and... It's getting not nastier. The heat is getting hotter and hotter every derby now.
Yeah. But, I mean, this has been going on a while, hasn't it? When was one day Ramos knocked out? That was...
Oh, exactly, yeah.
10 years ago or something, wasn't it? So, it's been going on a while. In terms of the game, obviously, Goodelli, we didn't have him down as a devastating goal scorer until a couple of weeks ago, but...
Nor did he.
Strike. Yeah, I know.
Clearly, it's something he didn't know. And then he hit the ball, and he had another shot saved.
Yeah, last kick of the game.
I think he's a really good signing by Sevilla. Picked up on a free transfer, wasn't he, from Chinese football? And I think he's been really, really good for Sevilla. He's been versatile in the fact he plays midfield, he plays at the back. Midfield is his best position, but Guido Rodriguez and Carvalho are playing there so well, it's not been an option. And I think he's done a really good job for Sevilla. That was a cracking goal, brilliant goal. The only thing you'd say Betis probably could have got out and closed him down. Teams will do for sure now. They probably thought the one the other week was a bit of a fluke and he wouldn't do that again. He hasn't done it before, but he's certainly got his eye for goal now and got his shooting boots on. It was a brilliant strike. No goalkeeper was going to save that. He set himself up lovely with a nice touch and then unleashed such a powerful drive. Great goal. Navas was unlucky, wasn't he? He was the substitute to come on for Montiel with his first touch. The ball was struck against him and rebounded into his own goal for the opening goal. It kind of all turned around that time of the match, didn't it? Betis got the goal. Borja Iglesias had another chance. Montiel was sent off, and then Fekir gets sent off just before half time. Borja just after half time. And as you said, the 10-9 at the end. It was fascinating to watch, to see tactically what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. It's not something that Pellegrini would have to have done on that many occasions, set up a system with only eight outfield players. Honours were even in the end. I think it was probably the fair result in the end.
Highlighting the difficulty of scoring against 10 men or 9 men, Atletico Madrid. Like I said, how on earth are they third in the league? It's just,
I guess we've got to look at the teams below, the Betis dropping points, Real Sociedad dropping points, Villarreal, we expect them dropping points, Athletic Club dropping points. So
I mean, that's the answer, I guess,
more,
isn't it?
More evidence of the team, the balance in the league being really competitive. When you look at the league table, you look at someone who's down low and you think, well, if they were to win the next game, they jump six, seven, eight places.
Yeah.
You know, so you look at Valladolid and you look at Valladolid in where they are in the league, you think they're 10th. And 2 minutes ago, they were, you know, bottom three, bottom four. So that's the nature of the league at the moment. And I think it will continue like that. There's no obvious candidates apart from Elche to be relegated at the moment. And Espanyol, again, like Real Madrid, I'm going to give all credit in the world to Espanyol on this one. I don't think it was a sending off, personally.
Right, okay.
I think Morata made a play for it.
I couldn't decide because on the slow mo, you see Morata grabs Cabrera, doesn't he, and pulls him down.
Yeah.
But Cabrera has run across
looks.
Him. Yeah. He's not running for the ball, is he? He just steps across him and doesn't want to race for the ball. Yeah. So that's, I guess, why
panicked.
I sent him off. Yeah.
There was a degree of panic. And I think as a defender, you're allowed to do that, surely. If the ball's not within playing distance, you don't have to clear the lane to allow the forward to run. If you are in front, I think you can run across the attacker. Then it becomes a scramble, didn't it, with Morata having more pace and was getting alongside him and puts his arm across and there was a bit of grappling. I thought it was harsh on Cabrera, to be honest. And then all the credit in the world goes to Diego Martinez and Espanyol. They had a system to get to half-time, keeping the clean sheet, which they did. They somehow managed to score themselves with one of their few attacks. Really good, well-worked goal as well, cross and wide. Hosseini heads it back across goal. One of those midfielder players that were designated to run the legs off when they were down to 10 men. Sergi Dada gets himself in the box and scores. But the amount of shots they blocked, the amount of crosses they stopped, just by throwing themselves in front and making sure they got out and closed someone down who was going to shoot. So that's what the element I was looking at with Espanyol, how much determination they showed in difficult circumstances. Atletico were 70-odd minutes against 10 men. So Espanyol down to 10 for that amount of time, away from home against good opponents. Again, the efficiency of the Atletico Madrid strikers, forward attacking players, similar to Barcelona, but even worse, 27 shots, 7 on target. As Barcelona had 27 and 13 on target, 7 on target out of 27 isn't good enough. That's not to add on all the ones that were blocked as well, where if you have a little bit more composure, you can avoid the defender blocking the shot, that sort of thing. There was occasions where they struck it without even really sort of putting much thought into it, drop your shoulder, move the ball another half a yard, and you can avoid someone blocking the shot. So Atletico, I tried to watch to see how they started the game off. They started off on the front foot, Atletico. I like the look of the 11. My only complaint would be at times the back four, particularly the two centre-backs, drop too deep, even when their team are attacking. So when Atletico are attacking, the breaks down and the ball's going to be transferred by Espanyol to the other end of the pitch. I found the back four of Atletico Madrid, or at times three of them, because one fullback went, one stayed, they were 20 yards inside their own half. That allows space in midfield then. If you're dropping off, there's space in midfield for Espanyol players to get on the ball and have that little bit of time to take the pressure off and have a little spell of possession. So that surprised me. And I noticed that with Spurs, funny enough, yesterday I was watching the Spurs game and the first half, Spurs had a back five, it was 20, 30 yards inside their own half when they had the ball. And it opens the pitch up and it leaves you too much work to get up the other end of the pitch. You can't squeeze the pitch and you can't close people down because there's massive space in midfield that midfield players can't cope with.
Why did Atletico do yesterday? Why would you play that way?
It must be the manager's instructions. It's cautious.
Too slow? Do you think they're too slow? Is that compared to the forwards?
It can be. No, I think it can be an issue when our defenders get older. They start to drop deeper. But if you're a manager, if you're Simeone, then you've got to make sure that get them. That when I said about criticising managers about shirt all the time, that's one of the few things you can affect. You can't tell every single player where to pass the ball next, but you can get out of the technical area and scream at Savage and scream at Jimenez And whether it's Ranildo, whoever's playing at fullback, get up the pitch, get to the halfway line. But there's obviously a concern that anything over the top, they're not going to get. But when you are that far away from your midfield, the midfield drop deep, and then you're miles away from the attack, and it's hard to you know, the best teams are compact, whether they all drop off or they all push up. But Atletico were like back forward, it was too deep, midfield with having to cover too much ground, and then people do get isolated. Griezmann drops deeper into the midfield, and Morata can be isolated. So it'd be interesting to see how Simeone progresses. A toxic atmosphere in the stadium as well, with that protest as well. The first half was empty behind the goal of Oblak. Supporters protesting to the players about their attitude in the Champions League. So they decided they would come in at half time and not make any noise. So at half time, when they came in, it looked weird. As the players were leaving the pitch at half time, and it was 0-0, Espanyol were down to 10. There was a few boos and jeers because of the scoreline. And then all of a sudden, the behind the goal started immediately, supporters pouring in, and the rest of the stadium then started booing those supporters. So there's an atmosphere at the Metropolitano now that has to be kept to keep a lid on it, because that's not going to help their cause going forward, because there's some supporters are dissatisfied with the team. I think the big argument about the protest is that they're not designated to speak on behalf of the rest of the crowd in the stadium, but they think they are. So they're the hardcore supporters, the singing supporters behind the goal, taking it upon themselves to do a protest which the rest of the stadium didn't agree with. And then so it makes everything a little bit toxic at the moment at Atletico.
Yeah, but you can sing louder, can't you? If you know. It's always in your gift, isn't it, to make more noise yourself.
Yeah.
Right, where should we go to next? We've got more issues to discuss, haven't we? Can we do Celta Vigo 1, Osasuna 2? Osasuna doing really well. You're doing the ITV4, by the way, everybody. Tuesday evening, Terry will be on there on the Barcelona Osasuna or Osasuna Barcelona game, that way around, isn't it? So victory for Osasuna. And a game of great finishes, it must be said.
Three of them.
I mean, Iago Aspas. You know, I was saying Valverde was top of the, if you take the non-penalty goals minus XG, Iago Aspas is back up there level with him because he's just a brilliant finisher. Celta Vigo's problem, when you have a deep delve in, it's basically bad goalkeeping, basically conceding goals that shouldn't have been conceded.
That was the ridiculous stat, wasn't it? Something like 26 shots and 25 goals conceded, or something. So it was something like that. And it was like, well, every time someone shoots, it's a goal. It's hard not to, it's hard to ignore the goalkeeping problem, then, isn't it?
But they've stuck with him, haven't they? But I can't remember. We've discussed this with Patreons, haven't we? The change of manager, basically, that Carvajal is in, so it costs Cadet his job, and it seems a bit harsh. I must say.
Yep, I was surprised at the decision. I didn't think Celta would go down, I must be honest, with Calder in charge. Now I'm not sure. I thought there was enough. Yep, sticky period. But I thought we'd seen enough from Eduardo Calder to give us evidence that it wouldn't last and they would get themselves up the table, get back to winning ways sooner or later. They've got a talented squad. But now I'm not so sure. I think it's a gamble from Celta, and I think they're panicked too soon, as opposed to Elche. we'll come to him a bit later, it's bizarre. But I think Celta panicked with a manager that's been, because prior to Caldet, they were doing this on a regular basis, chopping and changing without any success. Caldet came in, settled things down, and I think they've made progress under him. So I'm surprised and I'm disappointed that he's gone. I thought he was doing okay, apart from this recent rocky spell.
Right, we'll crack on, shall we? Let's do Valladolid.
Two great goals from Chimi, though, wasn't it? The first one, extraordinary.
Yeah.
Struck him with the laces. Second one was a powerful header. He's really getting back to his best now, and that's going to be a tough game. That's the sooner away. Probably the last game, one of the last games you'd pick, I think, before going to a World Cup.
And if you win, you're guaranteed top going into this break. But yeah, tough game, isn't it? Because then Real Madrid have got Cadiz on Thursday, I'm going to say.
At home.
Yeah.
As well. Mm. So you'd imagine. Listen, we're saying it. Yeah, Real Madrid are winning that. We don't know, do we? Mm. That's the nature of the league now. I can't say at the beginning of the podcast, oh, you think, yeah, Real Madrid should be favourites for that. But you never know now.
So let's get to Elche. So it's a Valladolid 1-2 by 2-1. Richard, the Patreon, was saying, he asked us about Valladolid the other day, how well they've done, but let's focus on the negative, shall we, for the bigger audience. So Elche, Almiron had 26 days this time around. He only had one game on a Sunday, so that's all he managed in that time. It just seems bizarre, doesn't it?
It seems bizarre. I'm coming back though, John. It's 21 games without a win.
Yeah.
Two periods.
Yeah.
So why would you get him back? It's five this time, is it? Five or six? It's
five this time.
Five this time, 16 before, and it's like 21 games without a win. What? My theory is maybe they were still paying him. I'm sure they've done it before.
Yeah.
I'm expecting Fran Escribar to come back. They've got they're being ambitious with Bordalas and Paco Lopez. I could probably see Paco Lopez. I think Bordalas would be reluctant to take a job where they're likely to get relegated.
Yeah.
Because I'd be surprised if he took that challenge.
How many points? They've only got 5 points. So what are they from safety? It's not unfeasible, is it, actually, when you think about it? But, they're only... how many points have they got? Hang on, I'm confused. I thought they had four. I thought they had 5 points. Anyway, they're not. It's unlikely, but not impossible for them to stay up. Is that
no?
Yeah.
And need to make the change. To be honest, that's what the way I would see it. Because I was surprised at the appointment in the first place, and then when I see there was no improvement. That was the problem.
Yeah.
You're looking at it and you think, well, they're losing in the same manner as what they were losing before. So, yeah, they've got 4 points. They're seven away from safety. It's, I think the issue is, in my opinion, they just look so much worse than everyone else.
Yeah.
I think they need new defenders. It was not for Edgar Badir in this game. The goalkeeper was unbelievable in this game. He's been all season.
He's the only one who matches.
Save.
He matches to Stegen for how many saves he's made and the quality of saves. He's been unbelievable, hasn't he, for this team?
Yeah. In this game, he was ridiculous. I mean, one save he makes from Sergio Leon is out of this world. And Valladolid are flying. They won three of their last four. Javi Sanchez, centre-back, scored a lovely goal. Didn't do a lot of centre-backs finish at all. Lovely finish. Rocky Mesa had won early in the second half, and that pretty much wrapped the game up. But there's been no difference in Elche, not any improvement. There's just been no difference. So I did wonder after the back of this one, I thought, I wonder if they'll sack him. Because it's got to have an impact sooner or later, isn't it? And we've got this weird season where it's the perfect time to make a change coming up. If you can be asked to do it, sorry. But with one game to go or two games to go or wait until the midweek fixture, or wait until the Premier League weekend done next week, or in the case of Southampton, they've pulled the trigger already and they're willing to just make do for one game.
Yeah.
So it's we normally get this in the transfer window, don't we, when the managers get judged and they think, well, we're going to try and get some new players. Do we want this bloke in charge? No, move him on, get someone else in. But Celta and Elche have decided to go early on this.
Yeah, it's perfect, isn't it? Because you get your mini pre-season. You then get a little bit of time to see them, and then you're into January. So they're actually perfect sacking season. See, and people criticise the idea of having the World Cup in Qatar in the winter, Terry. But no, exactly. It gives a perfect opportunity to sack managers.
Who knew? Who knew?
Right.
I was going to say every cloud, but there ain't going to be many of them in Qatar either, is it?
It does get cloudy. it gets foggy at night as well. Yeah. It's not as hot as people say at this time of year. Anyway, we'll get to the World Cup in time. Kike Setien, is he going to get sacked before the?
Well, that Villarreal not that type of team, are they? And I was watching it at the weekend, and this goes back. This isn't just about Villarreal not scoring in this game or in the other games. They've got four goals in their last nine games, Villarreal. So this includes Unai Emery's run of form before he left and went to Villa. So this is an ongoing problem. And you know what you're going to get with Mallorca? It's an outstanding result for Mallorca. Mm-hmm. It really is. And you know what you're going to get with them. They're going to concede possession. They're not bothered about that. They're well-organised. Javier Aguirre's got them so well-drilled, well-coached. The players are playing with great discipline. Then they've got an out-ball with Marici, and that's it. It's not rocket science. But if you're a team like Quique Setién and you're not particularly worried about that, you're looking at ways how to break them down. And there's nothing inspiring about Vieira's performance in this game in terms of attacking intent. And that's where they fell down. And you look at it and you think, do we isolate this then? Is it Quique Setién? And then you look back and I think it's four goals in the last nine matches, which is dreadful. Mm-hmm. So this isn't just his problem. It's a problem that's been there for a little while. And he's going to have to find a solution to it, because you look at their team, they've got good attacking players. They've got good attacking players that are only on the bench that can't get into the starting 11. So somehow he's got to come up with a formula that makes Vieira more prolific. And more output in terms of attacking play.
Yeah.
Which I'm not confident he's going to do, to be honest.
No. In modern parlance, it's high possession, low XG, as in they have a lot of the ball and don't do a lot with it in the attacking areas of the pitch, which is his problem. When he's had problems, that's been his problem, hasn't it? These teams are toothless, essentially.
Yes, that can be the problem, but it's Fiorel's problem and can be his problem, so it's going to be fascinating to see what he does to instigate a change, because they do need a change. They're languishing, they're underperforming now.
Yeah, a quick nod to Amat for a brilliant finish.
Oh, what a goal! Yeah, brilliant goal. He's had injury problems and he's found it hard to get a regular place in a team anywhere. And a player that I've always liked, but has drifted off the scene. And that was a stunning goal, fantastic strike, turn volley, and brilliant goal from me.
More red cards to come. We're nowhere near the end of the red cards. So Real Sociedad had one, Valencia one. So Guillemot has scored an own goal, and then Elostondo got sent off. He had some 17. Well, I thought this was the harshest one, wasn't it? Or have I read that wrong? And then
a bit of a lunge again. I think when you slow it down as well on VAR, like we had Iglesias one. He didn't mean to do that to Jordan. He stretched and tried to reach out. And he studs hit him. Kind of similar with this one, I think. When you slow it down on VAR, it can be.
I just thought it was a clumsy challenge to get sent off, basically.
Yeah.
Old school, I suppose. And then Valencia, I mean, they get one goal, but, that was some. Is it? We have this debate every time a player gets sent off. Well, actually, that's Getafe nil, Cadiz nil. But those red cards were right at the end, weren't they? They were like 100. And,
yes.
We went on 101 minutes.
96, 97, and 100 minutes. Two for Getafe. Gaston Alvarez, he was unlucky, I thought. It was a handball as he was running back towards goal, but it was designated as denying a goal scoring opportunity, I think, it bounced between the two players.
Yeah.
It might have hit both players' arms. He goes off. Porto must have said something in the wall for the free kick. So a minute later, he gets sent off. And then Luis Hernandez deserved the red card for the elbow in the 100th minute. Terrible game, apart from that.
Yeah. But why can't teams score against 10 men? Is it one of the issues, I think, with La Liga and the low goal scoring is this relatively slow play? Because the normal understanding when you're playing against 10 men would be spread out, move the ball quickly, wouldn't it? And then exploit your advantage. And it doesn't seem to be... Is it just a coincidence that people struggled against the 10 players and struggled to actually create chances when you've got the numerical advantage?
Yeah, I think then there's no ambition. There's a lack and a reason for lack of ambition in terms of attacking play when you go down to 10. You can be facing a team that's playing 4-4-1. Some teams try something different. I think when you go down to 10, I always like a 4-3-2. So you have, and particularly with five subs now, you can freshen up a whole midfield and the front two with 20 minutes to go and make a difference. But the two players do give you an out ball. Sometimes when it's 4-4-1, the one striker gets isolated, you pin back, you never get out, you never get up the pitch. But some teams are quite prepared to do that. I mean, Real Sociedad, they go down to 10 in the 17th minute. They finish the game in 26% possession. That's not them, is it? So I kind of look at that. I know they're playing a half-decent Valencia team. I kind of still think that Real Sociedad should have had more attacking intent than that, particularly when you see Samuel Lino scores after 25 minutes. It's not like they held on for 80 minutes to the 80th minute and conceded an equaliser. So they man sent off, in, they go 1-0 up, man sent off after 17, conceded an equaliser after 25, and then they're content with 26% possession, which isn't, that's not their style of play. They managed to hold on for the draw. Could there be more attacking? Yeah, I think they could have done. This isn't the Valencia, the best Valencia team ever. They're doing half decent this year. So I think that it gives teams an excuse, and the support, particularly at home, will back it. You know, they'll think, oh, a draw will be a good result. We're down to 10 men for so long. We'll dig in, you know, we'll get behind the team. We won't ask them to get up the pitch and or keep possession. It's backs to the wall stuff. And it can be hard to break a team down. I think Barcelona had all that possession, all those attempts. They were finding it really hard to break Almeria down with, you know, I know they're the full complement of players. But if a team doesn't show any ambition and just sits in deep, it's hard when you're a team that relies on possession. Sometimes it can be slow and predictable. That's why your point you made. It needs to be fast. You need to keep the pace of the attack up, you know, move the ball quicker. If it does drop and it is a bit too slow and you're looking up and you're seeing who can I pass to, they've got nine players back behind the ball. No obvious passes, but we just keep the ball, it plays into their hands. So it's not easy to play against a team that is not fighting back, they're just sitting back trying to defend.
Last game, Girona 2, Athletic 1. Athletic, I just have won 1 in 6, which is not good, is it? But we were full of praise for them, weren't we? A few weeks
until
ago.
Until he started changing the team about. Yeah. I don't know whether there's injuries and he's been forced into changes, but at the beginning of the season when we were really praising them, it was the same team every game. Now I'm looking at it as different players playing left, right and centre. So what I would say about this game, I thoroughly enjoyed Friday night football. It was really good. And I thoroughly enjoyed the performance of Girona. And I'm beginning to, I'm not saying they're growing on me, because there's no reason to suggest they weren't. I weren't impressed with them. But a newly promoted team, the atmosphere is good in the stadium. Mm. They play a nice style of football. And they're, you know, as I remembered in the past, when they're in the top division, they're a good addition to the La Liga. Mm. And they deserved the win in this game. And Valverde was really sporting at the end. He criticising his team to a degree without being too personal, and he did hold his hands up and say that his team they didn't deserve anything. Girona did; they were well beaten, and it was an excellent performance from Girona.
Slightly worrying for any fans of Spain, however, worst goalkeeper as discussed statistically in La Liga is Marchesín. Second, Unai Simón. Soft touching goal, basically.
Not going to change, though.
No.
We know enough about Luis Enrique now to know that he's quite stubborn, and he's gone with Unai Simón, and he's not going to change now. There's a number of other good goalkeepers in La Liga, let alone David De Gea. Yeah. So, but Unai Simón, I think, is clearly he's going to be Spain's number one goalkeeper in the World Cup. But it is a concern,
yes,
I think.
Right, a quick plug for the Sound of Football podcast. I was on it. I recorded it today, so that'll be coming out soon. I was plugging my book with the fellas on that. So have a listen to that if you want to hear it. That's a chat about some of the details, some of the real we get. It's quite detailed stuff about how English football is set up and how it's going and how we play it. And all of those things. And Terry, you're on ITV4 if you're in the UK, and I think Ireland, this Tuesday. And then there's the round of games, and then we're done. We've got one more round of games, Terry. Yep. So we'll come back and have a look at them. Finishes Thursday night, so we'll do another podcast then, and then we'll have a think about the World Cup after that, and then the World Cup is there already, which is ludicrous, isn't it? But anyway, not our fault. Still, you're still allowed to enjoy the World Cup, everybody.
Still naming squads now, aren't they? Brazil.
Well, Brazil were out, weren't they?
Danny Alves in it, I saw.
And then the main 19 forwards, Danny Alves and three goalkeepers.
That's great, terrific, brilliant. No, Casemiro then. No, he's got a bit of work to do.
It's Casemiro, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's got to be on his own.
With that back, I say back four. I don't know. With all due respect to a couple of players in there who have been great players, who I'm not quite convinced are World Cup winning players now, in Thiago Silva and Dani Alves. And then you look at some of the other defenders and you think, wow, was that it? And then you look at the long list of forwards. Good on Brazilian football. Well done. Yeah, right.
But isn't it weird that they're naming players in squads that they're still not sure are going to be fit in? Dani Carvajal went down injured against Rio. He keeps going down injured, actually. And I thought, oh, he's done. You know, he was off the book. No one near him, holding his groin. His teammates were worried. Rio players were worried. He walked off and came straight back on. But it's going to be like that for the next game in La Liga.
One game.
Premier League game, League Cup matches. And other, you know, teams around Europe are going to be looking at it and thinking, do I need to name a squad yet? I want to wait till they're all fit and all finished and I can bring them all in. So Brazil went early.
Yeah, yes, yes. But like I say, you're allowed to enjoy the World Cup, everybody. It's not your fault. None of this is your fault. So enjoy the World Cup and enjoy the last round of La Liga games. And we'll see you for another podcast after that. Thanks a lot.